Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Am I allowed to kick out all the people?
Absolutely.
Here you go, Tony.
I think I am.
To Nigel's point, 75-acre property purchased in 1948 for $10,000. Today's asking price is $1.5 million, includes farmland, 19 single-family dwellings, and a 1914 one-room schoolhouse being used as a duplex. So you got 20 rental units, basically. 21 rental units for $1.5 million.
This would shrink your grid.
It really would. I could walk.
This sounds kind of interesting.
I could walk it. I'd never have to leave
anywhere.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, then. Plausibly live from a disclosed location, terrible situation in New York City, which I'll get to later in the show. You can feel the steam rise off my bald head, how angry I am being stuck in a rabbit warren on the corner of Madison Avenue and East 42nd Street. We are here with Pablo Torre and Tony Reale. Nigel's going to run the board and stay out of my sight because I'm so angry at him. He is sitting where we are in this particular studio. It is a beautiful, expansive studio. There are musical instruments around. It appears to be almost a recording studio. It is fabulous. And I walked in. I said, this looks great. And they said, well, you're not in this. You're in this tiny little room off to the side. And I'll get to this in much greater detail lately, but everyone from digital media who has come in has looked at me, and I've just said, look, it's awful, okay? It's awful. On the other hand, there's decaffeinated coffee and Lox and Bagel, so I'm happy about that part of it. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to, let's start with the NCAAs, start with the four teams, three of which have basically never been there before. South Carolina, here's a game that if you live in New York City and you love college basketball, and New York City is arguably the home of college basketball in America going back 70, 80, 60 years. And they tell you you're going to watch South Carolina against Florida to get into the NCAAs. How much are you willing to pay for that ticket? The answer is zero, right? It's a zero.
Especially when it's on at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
starting at 10, ending at 12:45.
It's a complete zero. So you're not going to do it. So South Carolina, a 7 seed, and if you had them, if your bracket has them, God bless you. Because if you had, even if you had South Carolina and Florida, two SEC teams advancing, traditionally the worst of the power conferences. Take Kentucky out, and it's garbage most of the time. So South Carolina advances with their completely insane coach. Pablo, what do you make of that guy, Frank Martin?
He has a voice which is tremendous. It feels like he has that sonorous timbre that makes me want to listen to him.
Oh, here we go. Sonorous timbre. Okay.
But yeah. his story, though, I mean, this is one of those things where
he's got a good story.
You look at the coach and you say, well, is this team the coach? I mean, in college basketball, of course, coaches are the institutions. That guy seems to be in a Final Four in which probably the average American couldn't name a player.
No players on South Carolina. Ever.
Now you know a player now, Tone?
No.
You know Sindarius.
I know that one guy. I know that one guy, but I didn't know him a week ago.
He sounds like he's from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Or maybe the lawyer from My Cousin Vinny on the prosecution who wants to voir dire the witness, Sindarius Thorne.
Didn't absolutely know the guy at all. So there is the PR campaign now about Frank Martin.
Yes.
Get to know the softer side of Frank Martin.
Which is sweet. I
like
that.
His wife and his children tell you that he's not the ogre that he appears
to be. Did you see him field the question from the child reporter, which I know we're already treading in a place that is very difficult for you, Mr. T. But so a young reporter, maybe 13-year-old boy, they didn't show him, so we were just guessing, asks Frank Martin if defense is about attitude or if it's about technique. And Frank Martin, whose base color is some sort of burnt orange when he's screaming,
yeah,
very calmly said, that is the best question anyone's ever asked.
So there you go. I mean, this is the softer side of Frank
Martin. We're getting it.
A former Bob Huggins acolyte who made his way through the back roads of basketball is now taking
You'll like him, though. There's a story.
No, he's super likable. It's just that it's funny that now we celebrate.
Even
this
before
man.
That, though,
he's a screamer.
He was a New York City bouncer.
I know.
There were bullets shot in his direction.
Yeah,
and he walked away.
Yeah,
because he's Frank Martin.
That's we're happy for him. So they're in. Oregon is in. Oregon beats Kansas in the most surprising game of the four. Kansas looked like pros. Kansas looked great. I would have bet anything that Kansas would have beaten Oregon. Oregon should have been eliminated twice. prior to that point. Oregon gets in. A big deal is made that they haven't made the Final Four since 1939. 1939, one of the few years in that century I wasn't alive then. So Oregon gets in with a pretty good team. Oregon, if you go back to the preseason rankings, Oregon was top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon is not a surprising team, a pretty good team.
They're a legit team. They beat Duke
last
year.
Dylan Brooks is good.
You know about the team last year.
They're pretty good.
But we should fire Bill Self.
No, you. Well,
no, of course, but that's the reaction that I've seen.
Well, you would have heard that about Jay Wright 2 years ago.
Exactly.
But they self-destruct.
They self-destruct, but if you look at, I mean, this is me getting on my soapbox about what college basketball tells us in its con of a tournament, which is this guy who has owned the Big 12 for as long as anyone is, what, 2-7, 2-8?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting into the
There's
sweet,
some fantastic
out of the sweet 16.
Statistic that when he is seeded one, he never makes the Final Four.
He's won twice, I believe.
Not as a one.
No.
Oh, as a one seed,
no,
right.
Yes, not as
but,
a one.
But as a one seed, according to the stat that I saw, that he basically has an average rate of success. He succeeds at the rate that an average one seed does.
You're going to tell me this wasn't a disappointment? They were averaging 96 points a game in the first three games of the tournament. This was the first time.
They looked like people who were brought in from another planet to show you how the game should be played. They looked great. They were the best looking team in the entire tournament, and Oregon took them out. And
It wasn't even a game.
No explanation for that. But fire Bill Self is insane.
No, but that is the thing that happens when you lose a game like that, and that's where I beg for more context. And that this guy actually is a coach you want to have.
Yeah,
at
and
any
by
program.
The way, good on TV when you talk to him. Good to have,
which
as a
counts
guest.
A lot for
for me
in the Mr. Tony rankings.
Gonzaga, yeah. and everyone knows my prejudice against Gonzaga. I will not try to hide it
and,
at all.
And mine.
Gonzaga was and is almost every year fabulously overrated, and they underachieve almost every year, and they've never been to the Final Four before. And I'm not going to say they got lucky, but they got the easiest draw I have ever seen, and into the final now, the easiest draw I've ever seen. In their second game, in an 8-9 game, they got Northwestern. Northwestern tremendously lucky to beat Vanderbilt when the kid makes a terrible, inexplicable foul. Northwestern then, and they're Gonzaga guilty of goaltending. Totally guilty of goaltending. The kid's hand is through the rim, right? And Chris Collins explodes and makes the unpardonable error of running onto the can't run onto the court. It becomes a technical foul. It becomes a 4-point swing, and Wilbon will tell you that's why they lost. So they beat Northwestern, a team in the second round that had never been to the tournament before and had overachieved to that point. Okay,
and they've eliminated all the celebrities, yeah. By the way.
Yes.
They've taken out Julia Louis-Dreyfus. They've taken out Bill Murray, and now we are left with no one.
Right? No, that's right. That and in the next round,
West
they
Virginia
get West
game.
Virginia.
Oh.
Here's a sentence that none of us ever believed we would say. If they'd only shot 28%, they'd have won the game.
That was a slop
West
fest.
Virginia should have Gonzaga beaten by any team that shoot literally.
I think if they
30% is a runaway.
If they had another 30 minutes at the end of that game, they would have got a shot off, Tom. They would have, and they would have beaten Gonzaga.
So now they get South Carolina.
Incredible.
They get South Carolina. There's a 7 seed that we all know doesn't really belong in there. They crushed. They played great against Xavier. They beat them.
Xavier was their best game of the tournament.
Yeah, they played really
Xavier
well. So maybe it's their year. Maybe it's their year to win.
You know,
win
you
it
breeze
all.
Past
maybe.
Something, though, and I'd be remiss not to bring this up with the gentleman we have sitting between
you
us.
You don't have to bring it up.
Yes. Pablo Torre picked Gonzaga out
in the pool.
In round one.
Yeah, but you had scientific evidence for that.
There's no science.
No, you had.
Certainly.
He wanted to vacation in South Dakota for the rest of his life. He wanted to be the king of South Dakota. That was his grand plan.
Odds, you had a particular set of odds that you quoted as to why you were doing that.
Yeah, I'm a man of reason.
Oh, yeah. Can
I'm
you recite these odds
well,
right now?
Look, there's a general theorem and there's a specific theorem. The general theorem is that if you pick all 4 1 seeds to make the Final Four, that is as unlikely as picking a 1 seed
to
lose to a
16
seed.
That speaks nothing
to
South Dakota State or
South
Gonzaga.
South Dakota State, I would point out that they were a fairly offensively efficient team, more than 11 seeds, more than 10 seeds in the tournament. And that Gonzaga, to Tony's larger point earlier, had
That's
not
no
really played anybody this season.
You picked against a team now that is the betting favorite, I think, to make the final. And then,
that's
well,
right.
According
the
to 538, there are 50% odds to win right
that's
now.
Right.
You bet against them in the first round. And what happened
good
to
job
you?
Out of you?
I eliminated you before the show 5 consecutive days on a
Isn't
round.
Isn't this
board.
Punishment over?
This
is
might
this,
be
this,
the
this,
crowning this, achievement of the.
I feel like I should have diplomatic immunity
when Pablo
on this podcast.
Picked on this fine podcast. It was the most thrilling set of picks that we had all year. So I was happy about
it. It was better than Bob Ryan arguing over whether an 8 and a 9 seed is an up seed.
Yeah. So upset. Now we'll get to the last game, a game that I hope we can all agree was a very bad game that was spectacularly competitive, the North Carolina game. Because it really was. The North Carolina-Kentucky game, I think it would come as no surprise to anyone if you said to them that 2 days before, the Kentucky-UCLA winner would have difficulty getting up to that level again against a really good team, because that draw was an unfair draw for the bottom of the bracket for Kentucky and UCLA. And yet, every time North Carolina went ahead, Kentucky came back without Fox, without Monk. They came back in the last minute of the game. They had three threes. They tie up the game, and then what happened to North Carolina last year in the finals against Villanova is what they were able to do to Kentucky, and they won that game, and that is, they are the blue blood team. Either would have been, obviously.
Do you think that's going to turn out to be the best matchup that we're going to get over the next week? Do you believe that that matchup in the Elite Eight had a poor resting place? That should have been the national title type matchup.
Well, it certainly looked that way, but again, you have to go. If you're Kentucky, you have to go through UCLA and North Carolina. Nobody, Gonzaga's not. They're going through West Virginia, and who Xavier. Did they have yesterday? And Xavier. That's not the same thing. That there's not that sort of history. So, looking. By the way, in our poll in the Tony Kornheiser podcast,
yeah, how am I doing in that?
You're not winning.
Okay.
Phil's mom has Gonzaga. Phil's mom will not finish last.
Are you
Phil's
serious?
Mom has Gonzaga winning. Ooh. Chuck Todd will finish last. Chuck Todd, who should stick.
Eat it, Chuck.
Yeah, he should stick to meet the press at this point. I'm way down near the bottom. Pat Forty has UNC but can't win. If UNC wins, Barry's Verluga and Nigel will split. And if they don't win, Brian Polian, who has amassed the most amount of points, because he hasn't had a job for about 4 months, you know, so Brian Polian is going to win because he had Arizona. Look ahead for me. What do you like?
It's hard for me to pick against Carolina.
Even though they are torturously close in every game they play, even when they sprint out to 10 or 12 and get dragged back in.
I don't have a strategy for picking these games other than which team.
Oh, really?
I
had no idea. This was not
other than which team in this particular instance I think has the most talent. And Carolina because just has the most talent.
Well, everybody has said their Jay last, Billis has been saying that from the second week of the season.
Their last 5 minutes proves what they can do. Although I am concerned with two things. You're not familiar with this tone, so you're gonna have no idea what I'm talking about. But Pablo is, and we've been part of many in our lives. A group text, okay?
Yes.
There's a group text going around the North Carolina team that they have titled Redemption because of the way they lost last year. It's the Redemption group text. That's really lame.
Yeah.
I mean, our group text name just for Pablo and I to show up today was Operation Dumbo Drop. Okay?
Yeah.
For no reason, but you just have to be creative with the names. So Operation Dumbo Drop was for us to be with you. The Redemption group text is lacking a little bit, too. I saw them celebrate with Roy Williams, who does a great job
jumping,
when he walks in.
The jumping?
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
But then they get in the huddle in the locker room, and Roy proceeds to count out the teams that have been eliminated with a chorus from the Tar Heels. And he says, it started with 68, and then four came out in the play-in, and that leaves. And they get to 64 pretty quickly.
Yeah, but then.
But then he said, after 64, there were the games, and then there was. And then
he names every team?
No, but he asks his team to come up with the number of teams remaining after each round.
They're not math students.
And 32 took about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And then from 32 to the next.
You need the designated math major.
Right.
Who's the walk-on.
So they were lacking in the ability to work their way through numbers there, and that gives me some pause.
Now you just got to go the Howard Dean route and just start screaming out states.
So by the way, the guy who we have one guy with South Carolina.
That's incredible.
In the Littles pool.
That's incredible.
Mr. Blaylock wins again, and Mr. Blaylock wins again. That's an amazing thing. Here's the one point I would make. This is not a continuous tournament. This is not the baseball playoffs. These are three separate weekend tournaments.
Yes.
And that's why you can't, you actually can't count in, because it's stunning that Kansas lost. I mean, it's just, and yet Oregon could come up. Oregon could be great again against North Carolina and then be terrible in the next game, because it's easier to prepare with the five, now it's like 7 days, right?
At this point, it'll be Saturday to Saturday for some teams, right. and Sunday
and
to Saturday.
It's easier to do that than the next game.
Mm-hmm. This
on
is what
one day turnaround.
This is what Jay Wright says, and he says this now with the clout of a champion. But the season is the regular season.
Yeah,
the tournament is the single elimination, insane bit of chaos that America enjoys to the expense of the season. But you know, it's not. Let's not act like this is some science, because it's not.
I got to the point where not now, but with 16 left. And there had been no buzzer beaters. There had been no overtime. There had more or less been favorites winning. It reminded me at that point of the Maui Classic in December. I had no particular enthusiasm for it. And frankly, South Carolina, Oregon, and Gonzaga, for me, they're not inspiring to me. Maybe to you.
Not so much. I'd like to say that I am as a basketball fan, but I do fall prey to the things that everyone does. Number one, who are the players that I'm looking forward to seeing? And number two, are there historical stakes where I can feel the shame emanating from my TV if they lose?
Well, if you got Gonzaga, North Carolina, you would say to yourself, okay.
What I'm rooting for.
Yeah, I can live with that. That's something I want to see. Any other combination, I think, is really significantly inadequate, much like this studio. So we will get out of this segment, and when we come back, we will talk to Reali and to Pablo about their lives. Is your marriage still going on?
Checking my finger, yes.
Okay, that's great. That's great to know. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Books ad. Are you familiar with Books?
Of course I am.
Books is a floral delivery service.
I'm not
service.
Familiar
okay,
with
well,
the
I'm gonna read
oeuvre
it to you.
Of Books.
Have you ever sent flowers online before? It's not a satisfying experience.
It's not.
You're lured in with $19.99 advertised price, and when you check out, it's $94. What happened? And when the flowers arrive, they're not at all like the picture, and they're almost dead. Those other flower companies are just middlemen jacking up the price you pay. Books.com offers a better way. Farm fresh flowers that can last up to 2 weeks. High quality, seriously beautiful. Additionally, they provide transparent prices. No endless upsells and free delivery. Tuesday through Friday when you register with Books.com. That's the free delivery dates. Plus the site, unlike every other flower site, is beautiful and modern. Check out Books.com. You'll see what we mean. I'll just tell you that there's simple ordering. There's transparent prices. There's no endless upsell. There's no additional care and handling fees. With the farm Books, what you see is what you get. They're cut fresh. They're sourced from sustainable, eco-friendly farms. They're a great value. Your flowers last long. Your buck goes a long way. They have farms located, Pablo, and you should be cognizant of this, on mm-hmm. volcanoes in Ecuador.
Ooh.
Amongst the hills of Colombia and along the California coast, where you just were, if I'm given the
correct
information. They deliver to all 50 states. If you need something last minute, they offer products with next day and same day delivery. You can get a never forget subscription, which is very smart. You give them the date, and well, only if you're married to the same person over some long period of time does it work. If you switch around a lot,
I like that. Do they have that feature?
I like
the switch around feature.
I think you can replace. Mm-hmm. I think they give you two or three free replacement names and dates and stuff like that. So special offer for listeners to this fine podcast. You can get 20% off your order. That's Books.com. It's spelled oddly, Books.com. If you use the promo code Tony, you get 20% off.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Johnny sat alone. It was hard to sleep.
Oh, this has a really good punk
Johnny's
sound
got
to it,
problems,
doesn't it?
But Johnny's got big dreams.
I'm just learning about this now. Now you don't have the rights to music.
No.
This is incredible to me to imagine.
We ask people to make submissions.
That's what's happening
here. Regular people. And this is, okay, this is Davey Hazard. His band is called Hot Pink Hangover.
Really?
We've played on the show. We've attached our song for your consideration. It is called The Summer That Johnny Drowned. and we get these things. Volumes and volumes.
This is incredible.
And it's good.
Because
it's always good.
So this is Pat Benatar 101 right here, right?
Okay.
I mean, that's what Pablo, you have no idea what I'm talking about. You're a young man, okay? This is Pat Benatar 101. But this stuns me. Someone whose core, Tony, is built on old guy radio.
Can't have
that
it.
You live in an existence now.
Have a very, very limited ability to spin songs. And when you're when you're beyond regular radio, in order to get the rights to Real Music, it costs $100 million.
I know that. Remember Goodfellas for Around the Horn?
Yeah.
I had to buy the Crystal song. Off the I don't know where it was, just to use it for a week.
But there's no like 15 seconds and under is free.
Yes, we can do 1 minute of old guy radio, an actual tune. These tunes, you can play them forever because
right.
they're submissions, and they agree to have us. Nigel, for example, because I would normally have Michael do this, tell people how they can send their music to us.
You can send us your original songs at jingles@tonykornhauser.com.
And we get them all the time.
Great
and
idea.
Great.
Now, do you make requests? Do you say,
no.
I like Dion and the Belmonts?
No.
Can I get a Leon and the Marchmonts?
Can I get some Runaround Sue?
Yeah. No. I couldn't be Runaround Sue. It would have to be Stay Around Lou. Right. Yeah. You have to go the other way.
You have to do parodies. All right, so we've done all, there's other sports news we could do, but there's no real point. Because I have you in this tiny little studio.
Sports show.
And before we
agree.
Before we all pass out from the heat, actually, we turned it down a bit.
It's cool in here. I don't know what you're talking
because
about.
Because with three bodies.
I have a nice knitted cardigan on. I'm very comfortable.
With three very masculine bodies
So, Pablo, last week, we had the greatest week on PTI because Reality came back to Washington.
Oh, man. I'm aware.
We had a wonderful, wonderful time. But you have chosen, both of you have chosen, to make your lives in New York. And you were both born in New York and raised in New York. Pablo went away to some fancy prep school private school. Right. And we'll get to that later. And you went away to us for a while.
I did.
So tell me about living in New York and whether I can tempt you back to Washington.
I'll say this, Pablo, I know you were traveling. So I come in to do the week for Horn and PTI. And the first day, I'm so off the walls. I mean, there's so much energy. There's just so
amazing.
Much. There's nostalgia, right? There's real nostalgia.
No, and he's running around like Scorsese.
And I miss nostalgia. Nobody does nostalgia like they used to. So I show up and I go in there and I'm like, you know what? The BBC video of the kids going behind dads.
Yeah.
I really need to recreate this because that was the exact feeling I have.
Yeah.
So we put a camera on Kelleher and Kornheiser. And Tony says this. Because he knows whenever I'm around, I'm shooting some sort of four-camera Scorsese shoot. And I'm trying to steal music off the internet as well.
Luckily,
for those
though, no rat crawls across the screen at the end and gives
me a real subtle metaphor, Marty. Yeah. Real subtle metaphor.
Yeah.
So I'd say, just roll the camera. I set up the shot to Tony being the right spot, the right lighting. And Tony asks me, how am I going to know when you're behind me? I think you're going to know. So I enter like the beautiful four-year-old girl with the glasses behind, bah, 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 walking into the room. And then I do the wheelie one. And then I give Tony the kiss that he'd been trying to avoid for the last since I last saw him at your wedding 3 months ago. But my energy was so back to 22 years of age when I first met you. To the
pre-kidney stones.
Pre-kidney stones, pre-sushi at the airport, pre-muscles from Brussels, LaGuardia Airport proposal. This was me in my most distilled state. But I'm watching, or Sam's watching the video that night or the next day, and she is like, "What are you doing?
Yeah, it's so
you
great.
Dope."
No, it's so great. No,
I mean, there's videos somewhere on the internet of us on the set with Jay Williams. And I'm in my head very excited to be here, and I'm doing a Mick Jagger impression as I am wont to do and as I would do 15 years ago. But the camera caught me like a 5-year-old boy saying, "Hey, Tone, you like this, Tone? You like this? She's so cope. She's so cope."
One of the things
bum.
Different in what you do, Tony, and what you do, Pablo, is the shows that you are on, by and large, you are solitary. Right?
We're in a room by ourselves.
Even if you're in New York together doing Around the Horn.
We're on different floors.
Yeah, so you're not together. And the show that Mike and I do has so much more, it would be cliche to say family. I won't even say that, but it has the community feel. Mm-hmm. Like you're out there with the same people all the time. We drag them in, and we drag Julia in to cheer. We drag people in to cheer when somebody new is on the show. And I'm sort of wondering, that's the only TV really that I've ever done. And it is, and I will say this forever, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. Every part of it is wonderful. We prep the show together. We do the show together. And you don't have that.
That's my core. That's who I am, too.
Yes.
That's what I felt like you know, I was going to miss the most. And
you came home for a week.
And I dropped off my laundry, and it still hasn't been clean, Tone, get on that. I'll say this, when I left, and I do GMA, Good Morning America, on weekends, early morning hits, did it all this weekend, even when I was in D.C. I was shocked about how much I missed that feeling. I knew I was going to miss it, but it really hit me in a place. And I moved home for family. You know this.
Sure.
I wanted to raise Francesca in New York.
Everybody's happy for you, but we miss you.
Yeah. And I miss that dynamic most of all. And I think how it manifests itself is the first 10 minutes when we're on the Around the Horn set, Pablo, and Pablo can attest to this, when we play music to set the mood, I am bouncing off the walls like nobody's business. I think some people need to get themselves up for TV. I need to get myself down for TV, and that's where it is right now.
And you've done the same type of shows, the sort of, like in the movie 21, where you're in the isolation booth yourself and you have the headset on, and that's really, you're not doing it with other people around you physically. How do you feel about that?
Did you see the Wiener documentary?
I did.
You know that scene where Anthony Wiener is doing the hit remotely?
Yeah.
And around him is just like the void, and his emotion and his anger when contextualized in that room seems ridiculous. That is how that can feel. And it's a testament that it does not feel that way, because you need to transmit energy. And that's what Tony Reale is so good at, is just bringing all of the adrenaline and putting it through the screen. But man, I loved... And
you've
love,
done PTI.
Yeah, and it's not just because of the things you mentioned. It's the fact that your office is fun.
Yes.
You
and
have a
young,
fun,
there's
young
a creative
office.
Vortex, I've said before. And that's one of the things. That's what birthed Good Cop, Bad Cop. We wanted to see you in a police outfit. I had the image in my head. Wilbon's going to doff his cap, you know? And Wilbon's got that little cat that's one size too small, and he's going to doff that cap. And that's what we need. And it's all about creating that dynamic, right? Yeah. I mean, you guys already have the best friends going back 30 years. I think it was the first week I was at PTI, before Stat Boy even. You and Michael were arguing Dennis Johnson versus Dominique Wilkins in 2001.
Right. But having that ability, having the sit-around ability, you know, that the logic... Every single day is that birth process of that show, and you leave a set where you have talked to, and I must add this, talked very democratically to the people that you work with. In other words, there's no, I mean, neither Mike nor I, and I'd be surprised if anybody said any different, we don't really pull rank. I mean, we you can insult us, and we will surely insult you. Yeah. You know, and even there's a...
You may insult us regardless.
Right. A 40-year age difference, and it doesn't feel that way when you're in that newsroom. So you don't have...
Well, it doesn't feel that way until you realize that you write all of your answers in longhand on a yellow legal pad.
That's
and then force Matthew Kelleher to transcribe it, which is a move only pulled, in my experience, by like the elder statesman at a law firm who has the leverage and the clout to refuse to be brought into the modern world.
Well, I'm not. So Jay Williams last week brought his own little computer and started typing on the computer on the set, and I went, well, what is that? And that was gone very quickly.
You intimidated him out of a computer?
You can't do that. And then he started writing on a yellow pad, which made me very happy.
That's a former athlete. That's a coachable person.
Yes. Wilbon and I, we write. I mean, we still write. Mike less than I, because Mike's only there for about 10 minutes a day.
That's the other difference, that you are furiously scrivening, and then Mike rolls in.
Well, somebody's
like, got
to go to the glasses.
The
I think we've established
that. We go to the glasses when it's important to do that. All right, so in your case, like Reale has now come to writing fairly late. You wrote that piece about Ash Wednesday.
Which is great.
But you would never have described yourself as a writer when you went to college.
No, you were
in the broadcast business when you went to college. You're a writer. So do you...
I am a writer tasting.
Writing so hard compared to getting paid to talk. It's so hard.
It
I did it.
It feels like you are tasting the forbidden fruit in the garden. And that
the
fruit.
TV.
Yeah, and that means, you know, you don't need to write. You think like paragraphs and structure and transcription, that's the route to fame and wealth? No.
But you love...
Come here!
You love being in that room on a story for a month.
You love to write.
I love...
Tell Tony where you were for a month. The Vegas. Go paint the picture for us when you're in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get to do these assignments where I walk into hotel rooms and Draymond Green is sitting there and Maverick Carter is sitting there and Chris Bosh is asleep on a couch. And I'm like, wow, I feel like an old school magazine, long form takeout, whatever
euphemism it is.
I feel like one of those guys. And that is what I grew up wanting to do. And me too. I learned fairly early, and you were one of the guys I looked up to, of course, but I learned fairly early on that I wasn't going to be Gary Smith and that, in fact, aspiring to be Gary Smith was a terrible financial decision.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, Gary had a very special quality. For those of you who don't know, I would just say to look up Gary Smith's
lyrical, his voice is...
In the third paragraph of every Gary Smith takeout, somebody falls down a well, and that predestines everything that comes after that. He's one of the few Freudian takeout writers that we've ever seen.
Freudian takeout.
Yes, no, he psychoanalyzes in a way that I feel uncomfortable doing.
Do you miss that tone, by the way? Because you have the same story that Pablo has about going to the Vegas hotel and seeing Chris Bosh sleeping
or Muhammad Ali naked eating grapes
right, naked eating grapes under satin sheets
the day before his fight with Larry Holmes. Do I miss it? I wanted to be was a sports writer. I mean, that's not true. I wanted to be Jimmy Breslin, but I knew I wasn't Jimmy Breslin. I knew I wasn't Pete Hamill. I wasn't that good. But I felt I could be good enough as a sports writer, and I loved sports. And I'm one of those people who gets very angry when the rest of the newspaper room looks down on sports.
Mm-hmm.
Because our job's harder than their job because it's every day and we're hitting deadlines that they don't have to hit every single day. So please, don't look down on me. And don't, when you go to the Olympics, come waltzing in and just slum for a while and say, well, what would you like me to do? Because I'll cover archery for you. You really get
it
out.
It sounds like you're almost speaking to somebody in particular here.
I am. But he's long gone. In any case, I wanted very much to do that, and I've said many times, and it will never be any different as long as I live. And I'm very happy to do this podcast, and I'm very happy to do TV, and it pays well, and I love it. I do love it. There's never been a thrill in my life like sitting on the Long Island Railroad on a late Saturday night going back to Long Island where I lived when I worked at the New York Times and have somebody pick up the early edition of the Sunday New York Times and start reading my stuff. And I could see it right in front of me. And if they didn't go to the jump, I'd go, hey, you may want to go to the jump on that. You may want to get a little bit further into that story. So writing was the biggest thrill. I don't do it anymore because it is a diminishing skill. I don't have it anymore. I don't.
Your muscles are atrophying.
I couldn't do it. I could try so hard.
These fingers don't type.
And I would know that it wasn't as good as where I used to be. And I don't mind being bad on radio and TV. I do mind being bad in print. Because I'm still old enough to think that print carries forever.
Well, and do you agree that the degree of... I mean, would you go as far to say, and I hate when people minimize television as well, because one of the things I realized about doing TV after doing long-form magazine writing is that it is a skill,
and that's a
muscle in its own right.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. And what I would ask, though, is the degree of difficulty for you. It sounds like writing was always harder.
Yeah, writing's hard. Writing's really hard. I loved having written.
Yeah.
I didn't like the writing.
Right.
And I, you know, when I did stuff that really mattered to me, I sat alone in a room and tortured myself as I did it. But I loved it. But it wasn't. It was the magic job. What's the magic job for you? You grow up. You guys are young enough. Well, really, sort of in the bridge generation here, that you understood what newspapers were. But you know they're dead now, dead and dying. As Simon and Garfunkel would say, leaving nothing but the dead and dying in my little town. So what is the dream job for you?
Well, the crazy thing is that I've recently written a long, like, 4,000-word story that did not get into the magazine but went online. And I did not sense a difference in my own life.
Really?
Oh, so you didn't have a problem
with that? So it's not actually printed and
held.
It
wasn't. I did a story about...
You had zero problem with that? Tony, give me your reaction.
Should that have happened to you? I would have, though. I would have gone crazy. There is a point, as of a year ago, I might have gone crazy. But then you just realize that this is how people consume and read.
So you want to write. You're still in the I want to write phase.
I still want to exercise the muscles so that it does not atrophy. No, but if you pay me enough, I will be Craig Ferguson.
Yeah. Oh, so you'd rather be that? Okay.
What
is your dream job?
Hosting Jeopardy.
Yeah, that'd be so great.
You'd be great at that.
It's a great, I mean, this is a family tradition. My father watches Jeopardy every night, Joe Rielli, at home. He records it. And then he watches it again with mom. And he gets every answer right.
Well, of course.
How amazing is that? How incredible is that? I think I've said this, you know, when you go talk to a college or a high school class, you know, the jobs that we have now didn't exist when I was in high school to wonder what I wanted. I wanted to call the Yankees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had a Fisher-Price microphone when I was 5 years old. This is Anthony Reale talking about the Yankees. I wanted to do that. That wasn't going to happen for me once I got through college because I was calling play-by-play of Fordham games and doing stand-up material in the middle of it.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah, but I mean, I can give you two Fordham guys that are calling games right now.
I can give you about 30.
And I give you Vin Scully.
Yes. And I went there for that tone. I did. Mike Breen was calling games locally for the Knicks. Bob Papa for the Giants. Spiro Ditas is calling him now.
And he's your boy,
at the tournament. Yes, it's an incredible thing to be watching the tournament. This is the guy we went on road trips to St. Bonaventure, which is in...
Only in New York,
only
baby.
In New York.
Stay there.
Which has a bowling alley, or did at the time, which was called Bolian Lanes. Olean Lanes. Bolian and Olean. I mean, come on. Yeah. So I wanted to do that. But somehow, some way, I was already doing what I'm doing now in college, just didn't know it. And the industry kind of, the Venn diagram became a circle very luckily.
Is there something you wanted? Is there something, I mean, you're awfully young, but is there something you wanted?
The thing that I worry about a lot is the fact that TV is not the future. And so what I want
that will become newspapers
is the next thing.
Right.
Because I feel that in a way that I have friends who work at like Hulu and these streaming services. And when they are talking about the pessimism that they have about the future of streaming services, which is the future of television, I begin to wonder how many steps behind are all of us. And so what I want is to be ahead of the curve. And that is something that I
don't currently know. Tony, you should really start worrying about this now. We're at a point right now. TV... Your future might not be in TV.
I don't have to worry.
So you have to worry about this.
I don't have
and
to
I
worry.
Think the only future might be Mars for you. I think you got to take it.
Periscoping from Mars.
I just think sometimes when I listen to Pablo, I think, him and Elon Musk, they're going out there together.
Oh, do you know something?
No, they're going. Am I hitting on something?
Can you talk about this? Let's talk about this.
Is Elon Musk your boy?
I have a friend who works for Elon Musk.
This is
right.
And my friend came to me and said, Elon Musk is looking for someone to run, to be a spokesman, press secretary.
The face of Mars.
Did I get
Pablo
this out
was
going to
be the face of Mars.
No, so I went out there and I visited
Mars?
SpaceX.
You went out to Mars?
Oh. With the intention of visiting. No, but I went and visited SpaceX, didn't meet with Elon, but met with my friend, got the tour, got a pitch about what this job description would be like. And for a solid day, I was huffing...
I was talking to you this day.
The wonderful gases that was like the Mars dream and like selling America on space and interplanetary
our interplanetary
existence.
Friend Pablo Torre.
And at the end of the day, Tony, and this is not an exaggeration, I was like, do I want to like sell people on Mars or do I want to argue about sports with Tony Kornheiser? And so I find myself in this studio today.
That's fabulous because those guys are visionaries.
Yeah, and that's the big swing, right? If you're
people my age, the Bill Gates is those are the visionaries, and now it's these other people looking
electric
way
cars and colonizing Mars and all of that. It's
my brother.
What a
works
great rhyme that is! Electric cars and colonizing Mars. I mean, Cole Porter, if he was only alive today.
Sure.
Let's get out of here. We will take a break. When we come back, there will be Old Guy Radio. I believe will be next.
That's right.
And I will talk about my trip up here. And the incredible coincidence of people on the train with me and what they all share with Pablo Torre. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Guys, it's Tony Kornheiser, and I found the best way for you to buy travel. It's Upside.com. Here's why I love them and why I tell everyone about them and why they love them, too. At Upside, you save money on travel and get a free Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time. You get savings and a big gift card for free, and here's how they do it. Upside bundles your flight and hotel together for one low price. Bundling saves a ton of money, especially on business travel, so they give you an Amazon gift card. Your company saves money, and you'll still keep all your miles. And right now, when you use my name, Tony, you are guaranteed a free $200 Amazon gift card your first time. My name, Tony, gets you a guaranteed $200 Amazon gift card. How can you not do that? Really, it's $200. It's free. Upside, save big on travel. Get a big gift card every time. Upside.com. That is Upside.com. Minimum purchase applies. See site for details.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
What else would we play for Old Guy Radio? Except that the Yankees aren't winning. If you're in New York City, you might as well play These Little Town Blues Are Fading Away. New York, New York, Frank Sinatra. Originally written for Liza Minnelli in a movie with Robert De Niro. An endless movie. I mean, it went on for like close to 3 hours.
New York,
was that a
New York?
Scorsese movie,
yeah,
too?
Yeah.
It went on. There were no rats at the end.
Oh, why do we always... I mean...
Because you can't help it.
It was a blight upon The Departed.
Because you can't help it. It ruined the movie.
It did.
It ruined
but
the
movie.
But
he's given us 1,000... I will not sit here.
He gave us Goodfellas.
How dare you say Goodfellas. This about
you no, come to New York and you say
yeah,
this.
Well, I was born here long before both of you. I was born at Beth Israel Hospital on 2nd Avenue and 13th Street.
Oh, I used to live across the street from there.
That's where I was born. Stuyvesant Town was like a couple of blocks.
That's where all the kids in my grade school live.
Were you born in Manhattan?
I was born at NYU Hospital.
And were you?
Staten Island. 17 blocks
north. Were you born in Staten Island?
Yeah, yeah.
So we were all born within the five boroughs.
Yeah.
I left a long, long time ago. And so that's why I had to come back on a train in order for me to get to New York. Now, you would say, well, Tony, why are you here? And I am here. There is a dinner tonight. It is the Penn Faulkner dinner. In which a lot of wonderful writers are honored.
Wow, congratulations,
Tony. Yeah, I'm not one of them. I'm not being honored. I am here to introduce Bill Knack, who is being honored for a career in sports writing.
Hold on a second.
I'm not honored.
So you're...
I came up to introduce Bill Knack.
That's not Mr. Tony. Mr. Tony comes
this is very
and he gets
man.
Awards. Yeah, Mr. Tony doesn't give out awards.
I'm not even giving out an award. Well, I'm introducing someone who's getting an award for something that I did for a living.
I go away
it was pretty good.
I go away for 2 years, and this is where we are right now?
Yes,
how did we allow this to happen?
It's terrible. And my understanding is that there will be novelists and playwrights and
biographers. It's a very legitimate ceremony.
Yeah, and I was told to introduce him for 2 to 3 minutes.
This is wonderful. Your brothers, right?
Yeah. No, I worked with Bill. I worked with Bill Knack. In fact, I will even give you some of it now. I worked with Bill Knack in the early 19 and mid 1970s at Newsday. And Bill Knack is a great writer. He is most known for his work at Sports Illustrated, and particularly his work on horse racing.
Right.
And he's written books that became movies and very, very good movies. Knack, and I will say that I will use these exact words tonight, Knack is the most singularly unfit human being to have ever written a daily sports column in a newspaper. He could not hit a deadline. He could not hit a deadline. We had deadlines. We started out as an afternoon paper, but by the early 1970s, we were a morning paper, and we converted. So we would have a deadline, a first edition deadline of about 6 or 6:30 that nobody made. It didn't really matter. Nobody was making that. And then we had a big run at about 11:15 to 11:30 after the night games were over. Knack couldn't possibly hit that. We had one at about 1:15 that was another big run. Knack blew through that. And then we had the last deadline at 2 o'clock. And if you did not get in by 2 o'clock in the morning, then the only person who read your copy was a very angry man at the copy desk wanting to go home, waiting for Bill Knack to call in. And so I would say 80% of Knack's great stuff was never read by human beings other than that guy. There are two Knack stories that are definitive. One I know to be true and one I hope is true. The one that I know to be true is during the mid-1970s when Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin were going through all that stuff with the Yankees. Knack wanted to go out and write about that, and he ended up at Tiger Stadium. And he's covering a Yankee night game at Tiger Stadium, and he's slow, and he's slow, and he's slow, and he's slow. And at about 1:15 or so, the guy running the press box, who couldn't care less about Bill Knack and Newsday, says, "Get out. I'm locking up. You're the last person in here, and I want to go home. Get out." Knack takes his typewriter in the days when people had typewriters. You didn't need electricity. You had a typewriter, and wanders outside into an area that was lit by a concession stand that said hot dogs. And Knack finished his copy by the light of this particular sign. There are no other lights in the entire ballpark. And Knack calls it in at 2:30. Nobody sees it. Spiked immediately. Nobody sees it. And Knack now is going to leave. Knack's going to leave, except that every single door at Tiger Stadium is padlocked, and he can't get out. And at 4 in the morning, Knack has wandered onto the field going, help me, somebody help me, I can't get out. That is a true story. The other story that may be apocryphal, but I hope is not, is about Knack in his travels chasing a fighter, chasing Ali or Holmes or Duran or somebody like that. And in those days, when you went on a road trip with a team, you would often, you'd get into a certain city and you would call the hotel operator when there were such things as hotel operators before cell phones, when you didn't really know what time it was. And you'd call up and you would typically say, what time is it? And the reason you would do this is because you would have entered a different time zone. You know, you would have gone from, you're covering Baltimore, you end up in Texas. Well, just what time is it so I can set my watch so I can be ready for the morning? Knack, the voice that the operator hears goes like this. It's Knack. And he goes, where am I? No, no, it gets better. Because the next thing you hear is, I'm not in the United States. He didn't even know where he was. So you just heard half the introduction to Bill Knack tonight. So I came up here, and Knack, very deserving. I mean, and thankfully for him, he got out of newspapers. And he wrote magazines, and he wrote books where there's no, you don't have this oppressive system of deadlines, and he just, that wasn't his deal.
I've never read a single Bill Knack Newsday
article. Wonderful. They're all wonderful. The ones made the light of day are actually wonderful. But you've read his Secretariat stuff, and you've read his boxing, his baseball, and all of that stuff. So I take the train up here yesterday because I want to be able to do the podcast, and I take the train, and I'm sitting on the train, and we took an early train, and across from me, you know that. Can I just
point out something?
What?
Because I was in line while I got there earlier than you did to the train station.
Yes.
And I saw you from afar.
Yes.
And you looked perplexed by the line. And I said, no, he's not going to be at me. He's going to have to wait at the end of this line.
No.
I will actually get on the train before him.
No.
Then as I walk onto the platform to get on the train,
holding up. First class, baby.
Yes, I saw first class.
First class.
I was like, how did Tony cut the entire line? He's in first class only eating and having a drink.
Yes. Bottle of wine.
What did you say?
Huh?
What did you say?
I just held it up and I said, first class car. Let me through.
And I tried to get in, but they used cattle prods to keep me away.
No, you
I was back in the village.
You're in the village. That's what they call where you sit.
Yeah, picture
village.
My train was like Bangladesh. There were like turkeys and cows and everything.
Fine, but we were having wine and it was very good. So you know that look that you often get, which is that look of recognition. Nobody wants to say anything, but they recognize you. It's fine. So a guy sits down sort of opposite me, a couple of rows beyond, and he says at one point, excuse me, I didn't mean to overhear. And I go, well, I was talking loud enough that you could have heard me on the moon, so I don't mind. I understand I'm public. I get it. And he is Eli Schlamm, and you probably don't know who he is. But he went...
Schlamm?
S-C-H-L-A-M. And he's a lawyer now, and he went to Penn when my son went to Penn. I mean, he was a little bit older than him. Yeah. So, and I say, well, what do you do now? Because I'm now having, why wouldn't I have a conversation that everybody could hear? It doesn't really matter to me. So he's a lawyer. And where did he go to law school? Well, of course, he went to Harvard. Oh. He went to Harvard Law School. Yeah. And then
one of those,
you went to Harvard. Well, you went undergrad, of course.
Yeah. Law school's a different story.
Right. So three rows back of him, a guy says, my wife went to Harvard Law School.
Oh, yeah. God.
And now she bakes.
And now she bakes. First class conversation.
She gave me biscotti. It was very, very good.
That's
it was with pistachio nuts from Turkey, which I was unaware of. So so I knew that I was coming up here to see you. And my own son has a master's degree from Harvard.
Yes. We just have to make sure that's clear for everybody.
Right,
yes. We've now dropped Ivy League schools 10 times.
Right. But Pablo did the hard part.
Undergrad's the hard part. Harvard Law is a cakewalk. Okay.
So my question is obvious. Do you even talk to the grad students?
It is crazy that I took a class called Justice. It was Professor Michael Sandel, and he now teaches this to the world via the internet. It's Moral Reasoning 22 Justice. Huge class. And you learn about Rawls and Kant and John Locke and all this. And at the time, obviously, we have these seminars, and the teacher in the seminar is a grad student, is a teaching fellow. It's a law student. And I think about that now, that I was held in this philosophical rapture by this Harvard law student who was like 20. Like, what? No, that didn't. That's not education. Like, a law student talked to me about John Locke for a year, and that was how I... No. It's crazy to me that the law students, which is my main interaction with them, were stand-ins for professors.
Yeah.
Because I know law students. I was almost a law student. One of my friends...
You took the LSAT,
undergrad,
right?
I took the LSAT twice.
Twice.
In a failed attempt,
You didn't like the first...
I didn't like the first one. Yeah. The second one met the appropriate threshold that I was shooting for, but by then I was at Sports Illustrated and not doing anything that felt like work. But no, the law student, I mean, it's just, the ecosystem of Harvard, when you look back, it's like, oh, wait a minute, we were all taught by law students? Like, that's not real education.
I really love to say, this is a great conversation you guys are having. When you get the Cliff Notes, just send them
my
way.
Wait, what does it say on my hat? I went to Binghamton University.
I don't have any advanced degrees. But you're talking about Eli
Schwamm.
Eli, Operation Grand Schwamm.
Both of you went to private schools.
Biscotti.
I didn't go to private school.
This is Operation Dumbo Drop. We're talking about the LSATs here.
I was very happy to have had that.
I'm glad they treated you well, Tony. Your favorite nation status in Cambridge, Massachusetts at this point.
There's a guy who was running the Starbucks up there, who was a listener and gave me free coffee one time when I went to visit my kid, which I was really...
Have you spoken at Harvard?
No.
Did you want to?
No. I'm going to speak at Binghamton, though.
Who are you giving the award to there? This is an incredible
thing. I'm getting an honorary doctorate.
Really? When?
I am.
This
graduation in May.
Are you going to make people call you doctor?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing. I was asked, how do you want the diploma to read? What name do you want on there? What would your choice have been?
Dr. Anthony Joseph Paul Riel.
Okay, but if it wasn't, would it be Dr. Anthony Irwin Kornheiser? Would you do that?
I think Dr. Anthony Irwin Kornheiser is somebody I would go under the knife with, yes.
Well, that would be crazy because it's a doctor of philosophy. Pablo, what would you do? What would you advise me to do? What name would I put on there?
Yeah, you got to go as regal as possible. Throw in some middle names you don't use.
And I went the other way.
What?
And I went the other
Tony
way.
Tony K?
I went Tony.
Big T?
Dr. Tony Kornheiser.
Mr. T?
Because I said that the only reason I'm getting this, I understand why I got my undergraduate degree. I got that as a regular student, and I earned that. And my name then, my legal name, it is my legal name, is Anthony I. Kornheiser, even though everybody called me Tony. But I had no professional name. Now the reason I'm getting this doctorate is because of Tony Kornheiser.
This is a bad move.
No. Really?
You're going about this
completely
wrong.
It's set in stone.
Here's what you need.
I made a mistake.
Dr. Anthony Irwin Kornheiser is a must. You also need, when they give you this diploma, whatever it is you're going to handle, you need a lab coat. Absolutely. You need to turn in the cape that you wore for the better part of the 20th century.
I have a cape.
Yes. You still have it?
I have a cape at home, and it has a brass lions on either side of the chin.
You need to trade it in for a white lab coat with some brass stethoscopes on the side. So and you need to walk around for the rest of your life with your arms at 90 degrees up in the air like
Nurse,
they're about to be washed.
Scrub.
Yes, they're about to be washed.
Yeah, no, I said I would be Tony.
I thought you were going to be Don Vito Tony.
No, not Isn't Don that? Vito Tony. Oh, no, okay. So I said I'd be Tony. So I'm going to do that, and I have to do like 5 minutes. And if the NAC stuff goes over tonight, I'll use that. So by the way, you know how you know when you're in New York? So Tracy Roberts came up with me because she's going to manage, you know, the PTI.
You're going to do it from your studio.
Yeah. And so last night I got really hungry after the game. I said, you want to get something to eat? And we went just to the hotel bar.
Oh, you should have called. We could have set you up at the Italian restaurant.
It's okay. The hotel bar. Two club sandwiches and two glasses of wine, $75.
Welcome to New York.
Come on. That's utterly outrageous. So there is one news story that I thought that we would talk about because it may very well be generational. There were two teenage girls. Do we think they were teenage girls?
Oh, you're talking about this. Yeah, I think they were 11 and 13. I think they were
that young.
I think,
Nigel, do you have this news story about the girls
who were in Denver?
They were flying out of Denver.
To Minneapolis.
They were refused boarding onto a flight yesterday because they were wearing leggings.
Yes, and apparently the key thing of this was they were flying under United Airlines pass, like an employee's
pass.
Yeah,
like friends and family, one of those special deals.
So they have stricter requirements of what you're supposed to be clothed whilst you're under that pass, and this did not meet those requirements. So they said,
and they're getting crushed. Not the girls. The airline's getting crushed on social media, but that
they should be.
You know,
yes.
What they
said was, our regular passengers are not going to be denied boarding because they're wearing leggings or yoga pants. But when flying as a pass traveler, we require this pass travelers to follow rules.
Doesn't
and
Jim
that's one
Harbaugh
of the rules.
Wear Lululemon leggings
he
now?
Does. Yes. He yes. We talked those? About this on PTI
yes.
last week.
Yes. I mean,
it's an incredible look.
So, what do you make of this airline thing?
I'm wearing sweatpants. I am
me
as
too.
Close to leggings as I can be at any given moment in my life. So the scandal around, is it the spandexness
of it? I guess
that's
what it is. I don't know exactly. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I have trouble getting any sort of scandal.
Do either of you think that there is something that in an office, not on an airplane, but even maybe on an airplane, that there is something you could wear where you would say, you know what? No, not here. In your own house, fine. No, not here.
I've got an example of that for you. Didn't you have somebody that was a maid or something like that that wore a shirt that had the F word on it a million different
yes,
times?
And I just said what?
Now, that's an aggressive move if you're mating.
I looked at it and I thought it's completely inappropriate, but because she's working in my house and it's just me, I'm okay. But how can you wear this?
I saw this last week, though. We in our office last week, did you see a young lady
yes,
across
I
the
did.
Hall come in?
And it offended me.
And she
and
hugged my daughter, and I wanted to get a picture of it. It did not offend me. I thought it was hilarious.
Okay.
Francesca can't read. Now,
right.
Francesca was a few years older. I would have had some explaining to do, and
right.
that it's time to start parenting. My whole not to bring this back to what this was, because I think this is a relatively serious issue on some level. I don't think you should be. I mean, somebody's making a judgment on 11 and 13 year olds, and I don't think there's a place for that. I think you pull the parent aside, but this is shaming of a young woman. I don't think
yeah,
that's a safe place.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you on this. I'm inclined to, but there are a lot of people who are, by their nature, provocative and theatrical, and they wear things in certain public settings that I will not go into the specifics of this, but you know the specifics of this. I was utterly offended by someone who walked into the PTI newsroom.
I think
PTI newsroom wearing a shirt with a word on it that I was stunned.
Guys, I wore that one time.
I was just stunned. Absolutely stunned. And I don't offend easy.
You'll forgive anything for smart and
smart
funny.
Smart and funny,
I believe, yeah.
And I'll bet she was smart and funny.
This didn't land on smart nor funny to you.
Not to me. The combo was far worse.
I thought it was kind of, the whole getup, of course,
yeah,
was something
yeah.
that you could see coming from quite some distance. And again, I think it would have been different for me if Francesca was a little bit older and I had some explaining
right.
to do. But
right,
I would have
right.
to do some parenting there with a sense of
Where
humor,
are you,
I think.
Pablo? Where are you on this?
My line on airplanes in terms of dress code is you must wear socks.
that's
but only socks.
That's that's true.
But
because people take off their shoes
man,
on planes. I don't get
I never wear socks, and I wear socks on planes.
You need to.
I do.
They give them
to
you if you slide a certain
security barefoot
class.
If you take your shoes off,
I
which
wear
you
socks.
Have to.
I wear socks
So why
on
you
planes.
Want to walk barefoot through security? Secondly, though, I don't understand. I get people's feet swell.
Yeah,
on
planes.
A plane, that is
sure.
biologically what happens. But I don't think that means it's time to take off, you know, your socks.
No, I once flew to Narita from New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hike.
That's a long one.
And this was years ago, flying, of course, in coach. And it was, man, like, there was a guy right across the aisle, and he took off his socks. And it felt like I was being waterboarded with smell.
Do you know the Wilbon thing with the dog? The recent Wilbon thing with the dog. Wilbon's on a flight to Phoenix, and there's a big dog, and Wilbon's in three.
Oh, it's a therapy dog, so it's
no,
on the flight?
No. It's just a dog, which I didn't think. It's a big dog. I didn't think that you could do this. I didn't think you could buy a seat for a dog or just bring a dog on a plane, but apparently this is doable.
The dog
now.
Had a seat.
No, but the dog, as Wilbon said about 30 minutes into a 4.5 hour flight, the dog got into the aisle and just looked up at what would be the window and went just one lone bark.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then the dog proceeded to do it, like right there.
No.
And it was a big dog. So Wilbon described it as a 100-pound dog with a healthy amount of stuff coming out of the dog.
5 pounds
Wilbon
coming out.
Went crazy that this happened.
Was
it true?
Was he in an exit row?
The dog?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. But I mean, I don't think you should. I know a lot of people fly privately specifically to bring their, if they have money, specifically to bring their dogs onto the planes. I always thought dogs had to be in crates and stuff like that.
No, you can sneak a therapy dog into
a therapy dog at this point.
Yeah. Do you want to know an amazing thing about therapy dogs? And nobody listening to this podcast has any idea where we're
going.
They
didn't have a degree in therapy.
Therapy dogs, you cannot. If you are the, let's say it's a restaurant, we'll make it easy, not an airplane, we'll make it easy, it's a restaurant, and someone comes in with a dog, you cannot ask the owner of that dog, is that a therapy dog? Because that act alone, if it is a therapy dog, the person who needed the therapy dog, who was subject to tremendous anxiety, that act alone of asking
That's going a little bit
I'm far. Telling you, this is the law. This is what people who own restaurants
I have a short story on this. Okay.
Have to know at this point.
DuPont Circle, I believe there's a restaurant. I think I want to get this right. I think it's called The Circle or something like that. It's on DuPont.
It's not Chad's, baby, at the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer.
Trivia tonight, 7:30.
Oh, wow. You're going to get a big crowd for that. You know, Joe Reale will come, but only if he does it
he
beforehand.
Knows questions beforehand.
Short, low sofas, and we're eating outside, and there's
outside,
a dog.
Outside, you can have a dog.
Okay. Outside, that dog licked the pizza that was at my table.
That's not good for you. Good for the dog, not good for you. But you can, and because most therapy dogs are supposed to have an identifiable costume to them.
Well, they have to have a degree in therapy.
But you can't ask.
The lab coat that you're going to be wearing.
You can't ask legally. Isn't that crazy?
So it's like if you ask a cop, if he's a cop, he has to say yes. It's like the opposite of that.
And that's important in your life, isn't it?
It absolutely
You run
is.
Into that quite a
that's
bit.
Important.
Yeah.
We will take a break. We'll get out of here. When we come back, I think maybe we have a jingle. Maybe we have some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. Now, most of the time when we do the Harry's ad, which is a shaving ad, most of the people in our studio have the razor. I have the razor. Nigel has the razor. Saliza has the razor. Gary Braun has the razor.
This is interesting to me. I got my hair cut.
Michael Kornheiser.
At Harry's.
Okay.
On Houston.
Okay. Well, so.
And Sullivan in
so
New York
I'm
City.
You're going to want this when I'm done with this read. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality. They bought their own blade factory. By taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price, just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And Harry's is so confident you will love their blades, Pablo and Reale. They're giving you their trial set for free.
This is an
just
incredible
cover $3 for me. Shipping. Just $3. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle. Mine is orange because so is my skin. 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade. Rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for
this
you.
This is
try.
Incredible for me.
You're going to get this.
I'm going to get this?
Well, you can.
Because I know Jeff of Harry's. Jeff Rader. I
Are you
held
serious?
His baby. His daughter, Emma, is friends with Francesca. And what have I gotten from this?
Squadouche.
Squadouche. Yes. Now, I'm putting in the hard work early in the morning, and I'm getting the free stuff. Fantastic. This is great.
Well, you've got to go to him and say, I want the free trial set.
It's wonderful quality stuff.
Stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free. Just cover the shipping. To get your free trial set, including a razor handle, a 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel, go to harrys.com. harrys.com/TonyK. Put the Tony K in right now. That's harrys.com, Tony K.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks.
Alrighty then. This comes from Chad Parsons, who writes, Midway through the second half of the Florida-South Carolina Elite Eight game, Vern Lundquist mentioned the winner of the game would go on to face Georgetown in the Final Four.
Uh-oh.
Seconds later, he corrected it to Gonzaga as another G school. Was this designed troll job for Chris Saliza? Was Chris watching at home and his heart skipped a beat with a fleeting moment of Georgetown joy? If Lundquist was not correct, would Georgetown have been on their way to Glendale, sans coach, with the luxury of a bye all the way to the Final Four? We will never know, Chris Saliza. Fun when people attack Saliza. From Kevin Korn in Hershey, Pennsylvania, I know you love a good deal to go to an outlet store during a sale and even throw a coupon on top of the discount. Are you secretly an extreme couponer? I picture you with scissors at 4 a.m. in the morning clipping out the coupons in the week's paper so you can score 20 shampoos, 10 laundry detergents, 5 bundles of toilet paper, and 2 packs of gum for $3.21. I am not a coupon newspaper guy, are you?
I am stunned to hear that you're not. Me? I'm not a newspaper guy. Why would I be a coupon newspaper guy?
I'm not. I don't cut out.
How do they fit
coupons
inside your phone? I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't. Did you cut out newspaper coupons when you go shopping?
I just recently learned what a circular is.
This is an amazing thing. It shows the great generation divide having mainly to do with electronic devices. Because, for example, the people that cut out coupons are all at least 60 years old. And when you hand them in at, like, the refugee Safeway, they just sort of look at you. Like, what are you doing here? It's like, when, you know, the show that I really love to watch, Hot Bench? Yeah. And all the commercials are for drugs that people of a certain age need.
Oh, there was a great one
like
yesterday
that.
In the tournament. Did you hear about this?
No.
For, I want to get this right, opioid...
Oh, backup.
Constipation.
Oh, yeah, that's the guy who is a construction guy.
Yeah.
And he's got
he's a young hot doctor.
But at a certain point, when you watch that and you get that ad or you watch and you get farmersonly.com, you must think to yourself, this is on me.
Yeah.
Like, this is targeted to the audience. I am in this audience.
But it's Movantic for opioid-induced constipation.
And you see MOV, you got to get MOV.
Why hold it in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Shared with a haiku. Some have ridiculed while others have shown disdain. I roll with Phil's mom. Phil's mom, who has no idea.
She's got it going on.
She's beaten Chuck Todd by 400. She's ahead of me.
Well, I've waited for so long.
Greg Boersma, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Baby,
in honor of the Masters, here's an old golf story. 41 years ago this week, I'm a high school senior playing spring break golf in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. My dad and I are waiting to hit our second shots over water to an elevator green. The elevated green. The foursome on the green are putting out, and a woman is watching from one of their golf carts. We hear a loud shriek and watch that cart begin to roll backwards. The lady bails out, and the cart rolls down the hill into the pond and sinks like a stone. The men all come running to the cart, not the lady. Our group is rolling in the fairway, laughing uncontrollably. Needless to say, we played through. Steve Sunbeck of Arlington, Virginia. If this town stinks, Pennsylvania doesn't work for you. How about Inheritance, Pennsylvania? The postmark could haunt Michael forever if I buy that town. Kevin Sherman, what does Tony do with his notepads after each PTI show? Mm-hmm. Well, I have a legal pad, and I get about 5 shows. I get a week's worth of shows on my legal pad, and at the end of the week, I simply throw them away. It's not like I sell them or
You should sell them.
What are you doing?
No, I don't do
How
that.
Do we not think
God,
about
can
this?
Can I have them so I can sell them?
No. From Elliot Olshansky in Comac out on the island, close to me here. On Friday's show, you mentioned wanting to ask Ann Hornaday how her bracket was doing, only to be told that she doesn't have one. Well, Ann may not have made picks, but she is in the contest. My bracket... Hornadayton on a Thursday is in 16,596th place with 350 points. The scary thing is that it isn't even my worst bracket. Others doing worse include Iowa State Liz Clark Cyclones with a SIGH, MTSU Blue Apron Readers, Florida Man Friday State, a 50 for Jeff Ma, Maryland, and my best contender for last place, Desolation of Schmoo. Best regards from Suffolk County, where I've made the wise decision to roll with Spike Braun in my work pool. Actually, I have a decent shot to win money, though Spike will not win, right?
No, he
won't.
Spike
had Kentucky.
Kentucky killed him.
Thomas W. Branch, so with the pulling of the health care bill, are the Atlanta Falcons now off the hook for the worst choke job of the year? I will hang up and listen. that's a pretty good one. Michael Perry, Fall Creek, Wisconsin, doing dishes in the kitchen, listening to the podcast. You were in the middle of the Me Undies read when my 9-year-old daughter walked past and exclaimed with delight, "It's the Tony Kornheiser underwear show. You bring joy to young and old alike." P.S. Once I perfect the joke about the distance between Uranus and your undies, we'll get locked into that grade school demographic. There's if you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah
to do it.
Johnny sat alone, it was hard to sleep. Johnny's got problems, but Johnny's got big dreams. He could buy that boat and feel the ocean breeze.